Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of Signals from Mars. This is episode 432. I'm your host, Victor. And for this episode, we welcome aboard Ulf Uffe Pettersson, vocalist of the Swedish thrash band Mesro. My interview with him up next.
I'm ready.
Let's do it!
Quick reminder that in addition to hosting Signals from Mars, I've also worked behind the scenes helping other podcasters. With over 16 years of experience and more than 1,200 episodes that I've produced or appeared on, I offer podcasting editing, ghost hosting interviews, and repurposing content into viral clips, show notes, transcripts, and social media posts. If you've got a podcast and need help making it sound professional, or if you want to turn your episodes into content that actually grows your audience, I can help. Check out the podcasting services page over at signalsfrommars.com. Just go all the way to the right on the menu. You'll see Work With Me, hover over that, and you'll see Podcast Services and Sponsorship. Let me help you make your podcast stand out. Speaking of sponsorships, Signals from Mars is sponsored by listeners like you and also by great sponsors. If you've got a brand, product, or service that connects with rock and metal fans, I'd love to work with you. Our audience isn't casual. They're collectors, concert goers, and gear buyers who support the bands and brands they love. Sponsorship packages start at just $150 a month and include on-air mentions, social media plugs, and even product features. If you want to connect with a loyal rock and metal audience, head on over to the sponsorship page on signalsfrommars.com to learn more. So there's an interesting story behind me interviewing Uffe. Interesting to me anyway. So I always go on and on about Patreon and how I post music and try to help people, find new music that interests them, find music from bands that they love that maybe are putting out new music, or bands that they never knew of before who are putting out albums. The latter is my case. So I tend to schedule videos a few weeks in advance. I drop two a day and I get turned on to things myself. Mesro is one of them. I posted two of their videos off of their latest album, which just came out. It is Embrace the Awakening, and I get turned on to new music all the time. And that's why Patreon is so great, because it kind of makes me go through the mechanisms to check out what stuff is being posted on YouTube, what stuff I'm being sent by PR people, and what things I think are interesting to me and my audience. And sometimes it's shit that we just laugh about. Other times it's really cool things that, you know, may end up in our year end lists. Who knows? I do want to send a quick shout out to my patrons, Sean Richmond, Tony Espin, Anthony Mackey, Ed Ferguson, Johan Edistrom, Metal Dan, Chris Vaglio, Gabriel Ruiz, Mark Striegel from Talking Metal, Brad Dahl, Mike Jones, Jeremy Weltman, Steve Hoker, and Steven Saylor. Thank you guys so much for all of your support. Love all you guys. And I appreciate it that month after month, week after week, you like my banter, you put up with it, and you support me in this way. You can support me just by liking episodes and spreading them, sharing them, and been getting up there with my YouTube shorts and Instagram reels and TikToks. Been garnering some attention. I want to thank you guys for that as well, because it's gone well beyond what I expected. So I do thank you guys for your support that way also. So there's lots of different ways that you can support. Doesn't always have to be monetarily. If you can, great. If not, any little bit helps. So I appreciate you one way or the other. Either way, go to signalsfrommars.com to keep up with all the episodes, past, present, and video versions or audio versions of those same episodes. You'll find them there. Thanks again for checking the episode out, and enjoy this interview with Ufa. Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of Signals from Mars. Joining me today is Ufa from the band Mesro. The band has just released a new album, Embrace the Awakening, and we're going to be chatting with him for a little bit here. How are you today, sir?
Yeah, I'm really good, thank you. Winter just got to us yesterday. It's very cold, very snowy, and we have some sort of traffic problems as usual.
Yeah, winter got to us here today, but for me in the north of Spain, winter is a lot of rain, some freezing rain, and snow in the mountains. And it's what, 8 degrees. I'm sure it's a lot colder there.
It's like 8 below me.
Yeah, it's a little colder. See that?
Yeah.
So there have been a lot of losses this year in the metal world, specifically in Sweden. At the Gates, Thomas Lindberg passed away, which is a huge impact for the Swedish metal community. What did that loss mean to you?
It was it was terrible. My younger brother is the guitarist of one of Thomas's bands, Disfear. So I've been following this quite closely. Now cancer is a terrible disease, as everyone knows. And especially when it hits you like this, it's really bad. It was really bad. And Thomas has a big impact on the whole metal community, because he moved around in different genres, you know, like crust, which my brother plays in the sphere, and then he played death metal and melodic death metal, and it was one of the front figures in the from the Gothenburg sound, and right. Everyone will remember him in some way, especially in our age. It was like 4 years younger than me, but we grew up during the same period when metal exploded in both Sweden and Europe as well. So now it's really sad. It's terrible.
Okay. And you just kind of alluded to it. From what people tell me, metal has really never gone away in Sweden. Having said that, you're actually in a band that has to tour, puts out albums. Can a band like yours stay self-sufficient just by touring Sweden, for example? Or does the band have to go outside of Sweden to be able to stay afloat?
And we have to go outside Sweden, actually. No question about that. And we're trying really hard right now to get things going. We restarted the band in 2021, after having laying low for 30 years or something like that. When we restarted the band, we discovered that life isn't that easy. You can't ride on an old wave, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So we have to start all over again, and we had to establish ourselves again. It's been tough, actually.
Okay. Does Swedish radio help you guys out at all? Because from what I'm told, they've, again, never stopped playing certain types of metal. But for a band like yours, is there support?
No, I don't think we have too much radio support in Sweden. But as you said, metal never dies in Sweden. And metal has been around for so many years and many decades. So the roots go deep. Definitely. And that's why everything is happening in Sweden as well. The progression from the 80s and up until now has been totally awesome. And I think, of course, the culture in Sweden concerning extreme music and also, you know, playing hard rock or metal is very strong.
Yeah. And that's interesting because it is really kind of at two extremes, because you do have, you know, you alluded to the Gothenburg sound and you have a lot of extreme bands, but you also have a lot of bands that put out sleaze rock and glam metal and stuff like that. So it's kind of stayed strong across the board. It isn't just one side or the other side. They've both kind of stayed afloat.
And that's cool with metal today, because when I grew up in the 80s with music or harder music, it was very divided. You either listen to thrash and death metal and you couldn't listen to it all. But nowadays, a metal fan can listen to Europe and he can also listen to Entombed or us or, you know, At the Gates or whatever. That's how it looks like today, I think. And that's very cool.
Yeah. And that's how I grew up as well, where you couldn't listen to the stuff that was on TV and like thrash, even beyond that. I always tell this story on the show. In my high school, you were either a Slayer and a Metallica fan or a Megadeth and Anthrax fan.
Oh.
and you get older and you're like, well, that's just stupid. I like what I like, you know. It doesn't matter what anyone else thinks. So, yeah, I lived through that as well. So you just mentioned the band took a few decades off. Yeah. Why did you guys decide to take that long break?
Well, it was due to the tough circumstances for us back in Sweden in 1991. We lost the record deal in 91 and with Active Records. We put out an album, then came The Killing in 1990. And things were going quite well for us, especially in Sweden and in Scandinavia. But then the death metal wave rolled in over Sweden and Europe. And when we lost the record deal, we tried to get a new one, but it was impossible. Mm-hmm. So we tried several times, but in the end, we sort of lost it. We lost the hunger and we got a bit disillusioned, you could say that perhaps. A bit like that. And then also, I grew up with hard rock and you know, heavy metal in the 70s. And when you get a bit older, you start searching for your roots again. And so we lost thrash a bit, perhaps, after 93, after 94, and started looking at other things and other more hard rock influences. Mm-hmm. So in 93, when things were going quite bad for us, we decided to call it a day. And I started, actually, I was in a band directly after Mesro. I did the vocals in a band called Rosicrucian. Okay. We did an album, I did one album with them. They did like two on Black Mark. You know, the Bathory guy's father had the label, the boss, Börje Forsberg. So we released one album, but then I sort of got tired of the thrash and extreme metal business and just quit music in 97 or something like that. But the other guys in the band right now, I'm the only one who actually quit music. The other guys still played, and two of them are a bit younger than the rest of us.
Okay. And how, easy or difficult was it for you when you put the band back together in 2021 to find the right musicians to come back, to make sure that they understood your vision of the music? And I'm sure it needed to be important for you that you got along with all of them as well.
Yeah, yeah. Me and the bass player, Conny, it was me and him that restarted the band. And it was actually a coincidence from the beginning. And our original guitarist, the Messer stuff, he died from cancer in 2018. So we found an old song that we had done with him in 2011. So we decided to, you know, fulfill some commitments to him and do the song. And we did. And it was really fun. We actually discovered it was so cool to play thrash again. Mm-hmm. And we, when we came to that point, I really knew who to call. And that was my old guitarist, Ian Rosicrucian, called Magnus Söderman. Probably the most talented musician I've ever met. So it was very talented when he was very young. They called him like, you know, Yngwie Jr. So he's like that. Very, he was very neoclassical back then, but now he's much broader and he can play anything. But he's a real thrasher in heart.
Okay.
So I phoned him directly and he said yes immediately, actually, as he was standing talking to me. So the three of us started making new music, and then the other guy, we added the other guys. Ronny Björnström, our other guitarist, he's actually a quite well-known producer and technician in the metal community in Sweden and in Scandinavia and Europe. He produces and engineers records. He's done Meshuggah, for example, and okay. Other bands. So he's really good. But he's the important thing is that we have the same roots. And he's a bit younger than the rest of us, but he loves the old Bay Area style. And that's our roots, the Bay Area thing, you know. Nowadays, I think we have other influences as well.
Yeah, and that's interesting because when you listen to Embrace the Awakening, yes, it's a thrash metal album, but you hear other things coming through in the music as well, where if you really pay attention, you get flavors of different styles of metal. How purposefully was that done? Were there songs where you wanted to focus on certain things, or when you started writing, things just started coming out itself?
I think since Ronny and Magnus are doing the riffs, they sort of collaborate in best case. On some songs, they've done it on their own, and they have different influences. As I said, Ronny is very old school Bay Area orientated, but Magnus is very broad. So their songs sound quite different from mm-hmm. each other. And Magnus, there is a part in the song Inside the Burning Twilight, after the second chorus, I think. It's sort of almost jazzy. It's thrash, but you could hear jazzy or various Opeth influences. But he just makes the riffs. He doesn't think about it. He just, you know, do it. And I think that's very cool, if you can turn things like that into thrash. Ronny is more like, you know, riffing like Testament or
right,
yeah, and Metallica or whatever.
It's interesting that you bring up the whole jazz connection. That makes sense, because the first thing that jumped to mind for me was black metal, and there's a lot of influences in black metal there. So yeah, I totally got that in that part of the song. So
we've heard that before with the black metal thing. We have a song on the previous album, a song called What Is Dead May Never Die, and the same goes for the lick before the chorus in that song. It's also very black metal. Everyone says so, but We haven't thought about that.
Cool. The album itself is 38 minutes long, which I think is pretty cool in the sense that there are so many bands that, because of technology, just start to, you know, they put out an album and they'll release 15 songs, 70 minutes, 80 minutes, 90 minutes. And you get to a point where you're like, well, I've already heard part of this song in that other song. And it kind of gets boring. Whereas I listened to this album leading up to the interview, and I listened to it three times back to back today. It went through just smooth and easy. It was a very easy listen. And to me, what I got, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seemed like you guys were going more for the quality in the music, more so in how much music was being released.
That's very correct. And, we had 12 songs written for the album. We chose these 8 very carefully. And the other 4 songs, we will release the other 4 songs during the spring. But these 8 songs sort of, they mix well together. I don't know about the order of the songs, because that's always a matter of taste. Mm-hmm. But we think we did it on a purpose. We really wanted to start the album really thrashy to get things going. So we chose Architects of the Silent War and the Sleeping Cataclysm as the 2 first songs. And you get a bit run over with those 2. And then we slow down the tempo with this Symphony of Twisted Souls, but that's still a very thrashy song with a nice rhythm, I think. Those 3 are also the 3 of the singles that were released. There are a thought behind all this, and I think it's very important how you put out the songs on a record and in which order. Right. As you said, if everything starts sounding the same, you get bored quite fast, and then you stop listening. But I think we try to keep everyone who listened to the album interested as long as we can. But I mean, 40 minutes of almost 40 minutes of music is always tough to listen to, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and with the 3 albums, the longest one is 48 minutes. Mm-hmm. I mean, so it isn't, it seems like that's almost like a common thread with all 3 of your albums, where you've tried to get the best of the best onto an album as opposed to just throwing everything out there.
Yeah, and we got some criticism for Summon of Thy Demons because it was too long. People got bored and every song wasn't that good. So we thought about that really hard when we went for the 3rd album. The 1st album, Then Came the Killing, back in 1990, that's written with a lot of, youth in mm-hmm. mind. We were very young when we did it, and we did it with a lot of heart. We lived thrash back then, but mm-hmm. we weren't so skilled and experienced back then. We just wrote things nowadays it's very, very, we discuss and talk a lot of about how we would write the songs. Mm-hmm. It's important for us to do that. And we're a very democratic band, and we sort of get along good. I think that's important also. When you're younger, you're more direct in your communication, and that mm-hmm. could be a trouble sometimes. When you get too direct. Nowadays we are more, we're in, all of us almost are in our 50s, so, but still has a lot of hunger for you have to have that. You have to have a lot of heart and a hunger to be able to play a genre like thrash.
Mm-hmm. So it seems like there are things looking back that you wished you would have maybe done differently way back then in the 90s.
Yeah, definitely. When you look in the mirror, you sort of think about how things were back then. But you also come to the conclusion that, as I said, we were young and we lived thrash. We were thrash. Everything was about thrash. It was the whole thing was thrash, and the playing thrash was one part, but living it is another thing, and the important thing was the whole thrash atmosphere. Nowadays we play thrash because we like thrash metal or heavy metal or whatever. We have a lot of influences, as you said, but we also have families and other work. We work with totally different things than thrash metal, you know.
Right.
So you get the better balance nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, as I said, I think from everything that you're saying, it really does come out in this album. Was there anything else that you purposefully wanted to do on this album when you went into the studio?
We discussed Some of the Demons, the previous album, a lot, and what was sort of wrong with that one. So when we went into the studio, we decided to, for example, not use keyboards. We used keyboards a bit on Some of the Demons to get sort of a certain atmosphere in some songs.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't do that on this one. And the reason for that, it's cool with keyboards and effects, I think, but you always had to track it live. We really wanted to go for a more live situation when we did this record. So these songs, I hope these songs will go down well when we play live. We've tried Architects and we've tried Symphony of Twisted Souls, and they went down really well.
Mm-hmm.
And the more straight ahead thrash, I think. Back to the roots. Keep the roots, keep some of the things from Some of the Demons, but definitely go back to more old school thrash in a way.
Okay. And on the deluxe edition of the album, you have a live show as well. So you got to revisit a lot of the songs that you're mentioning, both off the first and the second album. How important is it to you to put that out and show people that maybe knew the album that came out back in 1990, see what you guys are doing today and kind of mixing your modern sound with those classics?
As you said, it was important for us to show people that we still play those songs. We respect the songs, and some of them are really good. Especially now when they are played with different musicians a bit, and they are very skillful. The whole band is very skillful compared to back in the day, and the songs sound a bit different in that perspective, I think. And it's very fun to play the old songs. I love it. I love to play these old songs. And when we play live, people go nuts when we play the old songs. So we will always play these older stuff. And it's good in a live set to get up, you know, we were talking on balance before, but it's very important to balance those things as well. So we get a mixed, set list.
Right.
We always closest the set with the old song Frozen Soul. It's I think it's the fourth song on Then Came the Killing, and that one has always been a sort of fan favorite from the past.
Cool. What are some of your favorite places to play? Sweden is known for several festivals. Mm. Is there any festival that stands out to you as a musician and as a fan?
I think there is a very special festival called Muskelrock, and in English that's Muscle Rock. It's a small festival in a very small place outside in the outside in the woods, sort of, in the south of Sweden, and it's like 1,500 people in that festival, perhaps, or something like that. But it's very cozy. And the bands who play there are very, ultra metal. Everyone is wearing studded leather jackets and looks like a band who's there, even though they're fans.
Right.
So diehard fans. And we played there the first year when we released Some of the Demons in 2023. So we played that summer at this Muskelrock. It's very special, very cool. said, you know, only diehard people. So that's very cool, I think. So in Sweden, there are tons of festivals, often quite small ones. But then we have Sweden Rock. We haven't played Sweden Rock yet, but we really hope to. And but otherwise, the festivals are quite small, not too many people. So we played in an indoor festival up in the north of Sweden from the same time as Meshuggah are from, called Umeå. And the festival is called House of Metal. And that was also packed to capacity and very, very cool. So it was really awesome. So a festival doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, 20,000 people. Right. It's just as cool with 2,000 people.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That I think it's very personal for everyone what your experience is. And it's much like talking about success to somebody. What's successful to one person may not be successful to somebody else. So, no. You know, a festival may be enjoyable to you for certain reasons. And another festival, just because it's huge, you know, is enjoyable to someone else. So, I mean, whatever makes sense to you is what's important.
Yeah, exactly. And I think as a musician, you tend to like small clubs as well as big festivals. It's just different atmospheres, but the feeling is very cool at small clubs as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. We had a discussion recently with some of my followers on Patreon, where the American band Journey has announced that they're going to be retiring. And one of the first things that I noticed was that they were playing in kind of smaller venues for them. And one of my followers in Ireland says, well, that's actually better because it'll be small and more intimate and you'll be able to be close to the band. So it's similar to what you're saying.
Yeah. Hey, I remember it's very long time ago when Metallica was very moving up. I think maybe during the Black Album period or something like that, they played just as a surprise. They played in London at the 100 Club, you know, with like, it's like 400 or 500 people.
Right.
They just showed up and played. It was probably one of the coolest gigs they've ever done. It was very cool. And I saw Metallica actually, for us, it was, you know, since it's an American band, I saw Metallica in 1984 in a small theater in Stockholm. It was like 900 people or something like that.
Oh, wow.
And they were, you know, on the Ride the Lightning tour. And I think that's the best era, Ride the Lightning and Master Puppets, when they played in these smaller venues. You could say that the feeling is that you get closer to the band. You hear things a bit differently,
right?
In a positive way,
Right. Speaking of some of these classic bands, your new album, Embrace the Awakening, in the press is being compared to the New Testament and the New Coroner. How does that make you feel?
Totally awesome. Two bands that are really cool, from my opinion, and. Testament has always been a big influence on us, whether you like it or not. We sound a bit like that. And Coroner is, we played with Coroner down in Bulgaria in August. So we met those guys, and they were totally awesome live. Really, really good. So when people compare us to bands like that, we just, you know, we get sort of a bit, honored by that, I think.
Right. Cool. Okay. Where should people go to keep up with the band?
You know, do you mean on social medias, or do you mean on in a live situation, or
both?
Well, our social media is always updated, because I personally take care of that. So if you want to find out anything about the band in any way, you must check out our social medias, especially Instagram and Facebook. We haven't, when it comes to the live situation, we haven't actually booked so much yet. We have a small tour in Germany in April, and I think. But as I said, if you want to keep up with us, just follow the social medias and you get every information that you want, actually.
Okay. And where can people go to buy Embrace the Awakening so that it makes sure that you guys get the most amount of money back from that sale?
You can buy it from our band shop, actually, from our homepage. It's mesro.black on the internet. And then you just choose the shop. And there you can buy everything. Everything from t-shirts to records to, you know, everything, more or less. So that's the best thing to do to support us.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you for your time. I've been lucky enough to interview some great thrash bands recently, and I would put this album up there with some of the ones that we've mentioned. If people don't know the band, I hope that this interview will help draw some people to the band.
Thank you very much. I love being here. Super.
Excellent. Well, I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Same to you. Take care.
All right. See ya.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to the Signals from Mars podcast. You can subscribe to the show on all your favorite podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon, and more. Go to signalsfrommars.com for more information. This concludes our show.